and back to North. I want him to get where you want to love him to. Okay, so we're going to see that living our lives more with greater happiness also infuses the greatest degree of authenticity. Authenticity means is that you will simply care less what other people think about you, which is an amazing thing. Something that actually the Rebbe spoke about on Shabbos is that, on one hand, we shouldn't care what people think about us, right? The grasshoppers in our eye, that idea is fine. Let's go by it. What does it make? On the other hand, quite frankly, a lot of people do care. Unless you are extremely super-duper emotionally healthy, like me, right, you are going to care. Now, of course, there are the people who don't care what people think about them, but that doesn't come from a healthy place. That comes from an egocentric place, an arrogant place. That's the kind of person who doesn't care, not because they believe that they are loved and worthy of love and recognize that somebody else has an issue with them, it's their stuff. Rather, they're simply cutting themselves off from other people, not for any other reason than to avoid feeling pain. They disconnect, right? We disconnect from people to either inflict pain or to avoid pain. Something maybe we'll get more into as we move along.
Can I interrupt you already?
That's okay.
Like, I don't hear much of messages as I have thought, but I don't hear a lot of messages about the need to be able to give love or feel love for others. It would mean, like, if I was somebody who said, you know what, I feel like I have confidence, I don't care what people think about me, because I can do what I want. But that's the more distance I see.
Right.
That person, or me, or whatever it is, saying to myself, like, I'm not getting a message that I shouldn't be doing that because now I'm not capable of loving someone else. Meaning, like, I'm just preserving myself as a gentleman being hurt. So, like, that's how I get through life, and that's how I stay happy, and that's it.
You're right, but that's just it. When you say, that's how I get through life, that's how I stay happy. No, we're lying to ourselves. We are wired to connect. So we are not happy when we disconnect. Unfortunately, there are, you know, people, or the rabbis, you know, people are complicated. So we all have complicated relationships. I mean, there's not probably not a single person in this room that doesn't have a relationship we'll call complicated, maybe with a difficult person. And we may even be sometimes a complicated one. I speak for you, not for me. It's not always so easy. So that disconnection, even sometimes when there's friction with someone you care about, it causes you to feel a little bit down. So we lie to ourselves and we say, you know what, it's like the little kid. I don't care, doesn't matter, you have a play date, I don't care, I don't need anyone. Or somebody, you know, like who is like, quote unquote, what does it mean to be cool? Cool means, like a cool kid, I don't need anyone or anything. I'm completely independent, I'm an island, I'm autonomous. No one can hurt me. But that's obviously a defense mechanism to avoid feeling the pain. Because with connection comes vulnerability. Unfortunately, the only way to have a relationship, not unfortunately, as a mechanic skill, the only way to have a relationship with somebody is if you are vulnerable. Because if you don't open yourself up to risk of rejection or pain, then you don't open yourself up to love and acceptance. And in order to be vulnerable, you need to be okay with you. Because if I'm not okay with me, I'm going to make sure I put the shield up to keep the world away from hurting me, harming me. I'm going to say, tighten my shell. And with vulnerability comes the ability to trust. And trust is at the crux of relationships. Find the relationships where you don't trust the other person, and you're not going to find a strong connection. Right?
So you said over Shabbos that self-esteem, right, is helping me to be okay with you.
That's right.
Yeah, but that's, and then you defined, you said that self-esteem doesn't necessarily mean being good at. Like, if you want to, in terms of young children, right, you want to expose them to a lot of experiences and a lot of different talents and a lot of different things so they can define themselves as well as who they are. And that, I think, does lend to some level of self-esteem because they're still experiencing things. But how then do you get to the true self-esteem where you're okay with you and not necessarily like what your talents are?
And then that, so you raise an interesting nuance, and it is true. By adults, confidence and self-esteem are separate entities. By children, they're a little more interwoven. Just briefly, self-esteem refers to the degree to which I love myself and feel worthy of good things in life. I'm a good person. I deserve to have happy, healthy relationships. Confidence is how effective I feel in a certain area or how comfortable I am with a certain trait or characteristic. So, for example, I can have high self-esteem. I can love myself. At the same time, my ability to play the piano is poor, so I'll have low confidence in my ability to play the piano. What happens is when you have a child that grows up and their entire identity is built around some God-given trait because they are smart, they are pretty, they are a good tennis player, and they don't develop any sense of themselves, they move into adulthood as very egocentric beings because their whole identity, who they are, is wrapped up in what they are. meaning what they got. And in life, Hashem creates this beautiful level playing field where our happiness is determined not by what you have, but from what you do with what you have. Which is why there are people who seem to have very little raw materials that are very happy because they galvanize their strength, they make responsible choices, and they utilize what they have. Other people giving everything under the sun, silver spoon, all talent, strengths, we marvel at them, and they're miserable human beings. There's a poem, I forgot how it goes, called Richard Corey. If anyone is an English teacher, whatever, you know that. Pretty much it's, I won't attempt to recite it, but it's about a, this is not probably eight stanzas, about a guy who seems to have everything, and then one night he goes home and puts a bullet through his head. That's how it ends. So, we look at people, and which is why certainly we know never to judge. If you're going to judge, Donald Trump does, of course. But you never know what battles people are waging inside. And we know this is true because think about all the stuff that you've got going on. And how many times have you thought, if people knew what was going on inside my head, what I was dealing with, they'd be a lot nicer to me. You know, they really would cut me some more slack. You know, but they don't know. But the truth is, you don't know what's going on inside anyone else's. So, you know, there's what to be said for just going easy on people. All right, so just to come back to the original thread, we're talking about self-esteem. How do we gain self-esteem? So we mentioned, as you pointed out, self-esteem refers to the degree to which we love ourselves, what are the good things in life, different from confidence. In a nutshell, here's how we gain self-esteem. Let me just tell you, by the way, is that I know I speak fast and I cover a lot. There's a great website, if you don't know what it's called, TorahAnytime.com. They have hundreds of thousands of shiurim from Rebbeim, Rabbanim, Rebbetzin, speakers. I'm on there also. I have hundreds of talks. And there's a lot on self-esteem and relationships. So if you go to TorahAnytime.com, put leave them into the search thing and the follow button, then you'll get all the upcoming talks, which we do probably much once a week or so, or even more. Okay. So how do we gain self-esteem? There are three forces within a human being. You've got the body, the ego, and our real essence, the soul and neshama. Body, ego, soul. Body wants to do what feels good. The ego wants to do what looks good, and our soul and our shama want to do what truly is good. The alarm clock goes off in the morning, and they'll battle it out. Anytime a person overindulges in the body, eats in excess, excess sleep, excess entertainment, temporarily feels good, how do you feel about yourself afterwards? Lousy, right. And two, with the ego. Think of the ego as a projection machine, the ego of how you want the rest of the world to see you. And the wider the chasm, the bigger the gap between who I am and this image, the more draining it is. And you know this is true in your own lives. Whenever you try to put on airs, put on shows so people see you in a certain way, you could do it for so long. But afterwards, you're just like, ah, gosh, I just want to be real. That's what the ego does. It protects our fragile self and projects an image of what we're not, how we want the world to desperately see us. Whenever we go with our ego, we sell ourselves out, we sell ourselves short. Now, to be clear, we all engage in what's called impression management, right? I didn't show up in my pajamas. One is my wife doesn't let me, but two is because, I don't know, who wants to be, you know, looked at as a crazy guy? Having said that, I do a lot of things that people think I'm a crazy guy, but we all manage our impression to some degree, and that's okay. The line is when you begin to twist and contort and move away from what you know is right and responsible to win somebody else's praise or approval, right? When you sell yourself out, sell yourself short so someone will like you. Now, temporarily, you'll curry favor. Afterwards, how do you feel about yourself? Right, drained. It's just like, man, just like ashamed. Like, why did I do that? I just sacrificed. I left my conscience, my dignity, my self-respect on the floor just to go ahead and do what? That's what ego does. It puts on a show so people will think we are just wonderful. Then we have the soul, the neshama, our real essence. Whenever a person makes to do what's right and responsible, right, goes with our soul, our conscience, our however we want to collect, our connection with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that is how we gain self-esteem, using Bechira when we choose responsibly. As many of you know, I've written a number of books. One of them is a book called, oh, I can give you a free copy of Real Power, by the way. I don't know if you have email or text stuff, but there's a free copy available, so I can give you the information now before I forget. Two ways to get it. If you text the word Torah to the short code 313131, you'll get a copy of Real Power. It's a nice book, and it walks you through logic about how the quality of our choices change the quality of our lives. 313131, the Torah. And if you don't have that, you can email, I think it's Lieberman, L-I-E-B-E-R-M-A-N, and not a spell, I was saying. I think it's Lieberman, 613, 613@gmail.com. I think that sends an automatic one also. So
would you just email it or text Torah 3131?
Right, I had text the word Torah to 31-31-31. Right.
It's a
digital one. Or just email and just say, you know, book please and whatever. And also there's a book called How Free Will Works. It's a sponsored edition out now. It's only $3 and the book's like 400 pages.
That's the one that comes out.
How Free Will Works. Nice book. It took me 10 years to write, so thank you for reading it. I like people to say it. It's like, I don't know what, like, you know, people are mamas generally always so nice, but there's some things I don't know what to say. When people say something like, hey, I read half your book. It's like, what are you saying? Thanks for the half? Or like, all right, you know, like, I don't know what to do with that. Yeah.
When you were deciding that you were describing things that, Western culture right now is really embracing the concept of being really true to yourself, like this whole catchphrase of like I'm speaking my truth.
Right.
So now that gives you open doors for like DCTs and all these other things.
Yeah, okay. Well,
so how do you now like
Okay, so good. The rabbit is asking good. So I don't want to go too far down the rabbit hole here, but let's just spend a moment.
It doesn't have to be that specific.
No, but I got it. You're saying good. Right. So here's
my
the thing.
Truth.
Right. So right. In fairness, the truth is that a girl is not a boy. So, you know, Abraham Lincoln once said, how many legs would a sheep have if you called its tail a leg? He said four. Calling it a leg doesn't make it a leg. So authenticity means being true. That is their own, unfortunately sad, corrupted thinking that makes them feel as if they can be anything because they are not happy with who they really are authentically. But when you talk about this transitioning or whatever it is you want to call sadness, it is moving further away from what the authentic self. It is not finding a new authentic self. By definition, the authentic self is who we are. That's immutable. Our job here in this earth is to pull away all the layers, the craziness, the childhood, the emotional stuff, to get to the core of the onion. It is not to get a new onion. Okay? So, and the idea about, you know, you have people, something else you touched on is a very sharp point about, I want to be true, I want to be honest. I'm just being honest and being my authentic self. And people can be very blunt and direct under the guise that they're being authentic. No, they're being foolish. Because in much the same way that shalom is the overarching objective in many of our relationships, Chazal allowed for us to tell a lie. Why? Because it preserves the larger truth, which is shalom. So people who will be direct and blunt and crass under the guise that they are being honest are not. They're lying to themselves. They're doing it because they want to get a rise out of you, or they have their own issues, passive-aggressive, wrapping up, whatever. Because a person who truly is authentic to themselves and loves themselves, the last thing they want to do is hurt anyone else. So they will go out of their way to package whatever it is as sensitively, as kindly, and gently, as empathetically as they can. So anyone who puts on, you know, the moniker of, I'm just being honest, right, is not honest with themselves, let alone honest with you, okay? So, coming back to our original thread here, body, ego, soul. The body, the good, wants to do what feels good. The ego, the Sahara, wants to do what looks good. Our soul and Shama want to do what truly is good. They all battle it out. Whenever we give into our body in excess, excess sleep, excess entertainment, it wears away at emotional health. And two, when we give into our ego at all, buy something you can't afford, make a joke at someone else's expense, twist and contort, move away from what you know is right, merely win someone else's approval, so that people like you, we end up feeling our core becomes drained. When a person makes a choice to do what's right and responsible, irrespective of what it feels like, regardless of what it looks like, that infuses us with an unwavering sense of self-esteem, and that's something you know is true. When you overcome, we spoke about this at the school, that is an embarrassment and shame, right? So when you do something that's a little bit uncomfortable, a little bit embarrassing, and the ego takes a hit, but it's right, then a shama comes to life. You sacrifice what's right so the ego doesn't get, you know, get dented at all, but then you're left with this stain of shame, which is a lot harder to cleanse because it's the real you. The ego is fleeting. Right? If someone found out about it, you feel bad. You feel, you know, uncomfortable. If they don't, you don't. The example I was giving is that you walk through those doors that's supposed to open like your eye and you bump your nose. First thing people do is they look around to see who's soft, right? Nobody's soft, they go like that. Someone's soft, like, ugh, I'm gonna kick the chair, whatever. So, by your soul. So from this we see an amazing thing. It is perfectly impossible for one person to cause a negative emotion in another. We say things like, my friend upset me, my husband got me upset, my kids did. It is semantically ill-formed to say that one person causes an emotion in the other. Your spouse, your child, your friend cannot cause you to be angry. You got me upset. No. In much the same way that it is a semantically ill-formed sentence to say, my friend forced me to have blue eyes, right? Someone else external to us cannot be the cause of our emotional state. Now, there are people that make it easy to become upset and frustrated. We call them friends and family. But ultimately, how I feel about the situation is based on one thing, and that's how I feel about me. So let me give you one of my classic examples. You're driving along and someone cuts you off on the road. First, by the way, by the show of honest hands, who wants to see what this person looks like? And welcome. Came from Brooklyn, did you?
Yeah.
Queens, like that. I hear. Right. So who's going to bother you more? A nice little lady driving like this on the way to her own Levi's. Or a young guy with a beer bottle in one hand, cigarette in the other, music blasting. You shout out. Who's going to bother you more, little lady or young guy?
Young guy.
Okay. There's one person who always says, little lady, where are you? Right? I used to live in Boca Raton, so I know she shouldn't be on the road per se. But why are we generally more bothered? Why are we generally more bothered by the little, by the young guy than more by the little lady?
What
he's doing? Right, but again, but they both cut us off, right? Or both potentially cut us off.
So one thing is sensitive on the road, the other one
you
can't help it.
No, the
one
shouldn't be on the road.
Right. Good. In one case, we assume a benign motivation. She didn't see our car. She didn't, see her own dashboard, whatever it is. The young guy gives to me on because he doesn't. Look at the insanity. She's driving along, then you almost get into an accident, then you risk your life, speed up to see what the person looks like to see how angry you should be. Who's going to make sure they're not? Me? Yeah, I do that. I know. Right, we are. We're the crazy one. We're letting somebody else define whether or not we get upset. Does that even sound rational? But we do it time and again. Now, what's happening here is whether or not we see the proverbial little old lady or the young guy driving is how we feel about ourselves. Meaning that the more I like me and love me, the more I'm going to assume a benign motivation with you. And even should I come to the conclusion that you do it purposely, I don't take it personally. It's only the ego, the eight of horror, that connects the dots that makes everything about me. Right? No matter what happens in the world, two people whispering in the corner, it's got to be about me. Somebody cuts me off on the road, it's got to be about me. How many people say, it's raining? Oh, God hates me, it's raining. Really? It's a lot of machinations to go through just to get you to ruin your picnic. But the egocentric mentality makes everything about me. Me, 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 me. That, by the way, is how a narcissist is practicing
around.
Hashem
loves me. That's why it's raining.
Ah, very good. So what the Rebbe is saying is about me. So
even if something hurts me, what does Hashem love?
Yes. So here is the nuance. And that is that when we say that the egocentric mentality takes everything personally, you're right. On one hand, everything that happens, a leaf in the wind, the entire world is just they're all supportive actors for me. But the person who has self-esteem recognizes that everything happens, Hashem is doing for me. The egocentric mentality is Hashem is doing everything to me. Because I, with an egocentric mentality, have an inner feeling of insecurity, inefficiency, deficiency, lack of self-esteem and self-worth, I presume that everyone sees that, and the treatment of me is because they don't like me. My biggest fear is that they're going to reject me, move away. I'm not worthy of connection, of love, and respect. Therefore, when the world doesn't unfold according to my grand expectations, I'm going to get upset because I assume it's because that the world hates me, the people hate me, and so on. So you're right. On one hand, it is true. Chazal teaches us that everything that happens is custom-made, tailor-made, perfectly crafted for our good and for our growth. The more egocentric a person is, we take that and we corrupt it into believing that everything that happens that doesn't go well is because of a defect or deficiency. There's something broken bad about me that causes it to happen. Distinction? Okay, good. It is a question. Very nice, sharp question.
So that, but that still also kind of blurs into, like, I must have done some sort of zero, or I must have done, or I must have to make this message for my growth. Because when you try to think of growth-oriented mindset things, you kind of need to examine other areas that you should fix.
Sure. But we're good. But so it's like this. I wish we had Mamash a day, because you're all asking just really good, sharp questions. It's like this. There are people who have a guilty complex, right? People may be very anxious, and they're no matter what happens, the phone rings. What's wrong? What happened, right? Because they feel, at the core, they feel that they may be perfectionists from childhood, under obligation, responsibility. It all comes back to childhood, by the way. But I mean, I say it all comes back, meaning everyone's quick to blame mom, but mom is the biggest scapegoat on the planet. Mom didn't do nothing wrong, just so you know. I can't say how many times, kids just love to blame mom. It ain't mom. I'll let the good rabbi know the rather than thoughts. Now look, what happens is this. It's not an all or none proposition. It's a continuum of self-esteem and egocentricity. By the way, at the ultimate of self-esteem is complete humility. That's someone like Moshe Rabbeinu. As you move further along, you've got, you know, the rest of us. But then as you begin to become more egocentric, from you have someone like Korach, who is very I-oriented, or Bilam, Balak, whatever, whomever. And then you continue on, and now you have mental illness. Mental illness is nothing more than an inability to be effective in connecting. So as my ego goes bigger and bigger and bigger, not mine, someone else's ego goes bigger and bigger and bigger, it now splits off into different pathologies, right? Personality disorders or affective disorders. Things now that allow for me to be able to bridge the gap of the dissonance, meaning I know I should be doing X, Y, Z, but I'm not. So now my personality sort of becomes fractured, not in the sense of multiple personalities, but in the sense of I can't be effective in my relationship with my spouse, so I'm going to depress. I'm going to feel down. I'm going to feel very anxious because I'm not doing enough. Anxiety. My moods may swing. Again, it's not to suggest that there aren't significant chemical contributions, but make no mistake, our thoughts and our defense mechanism, the ego, is equipped with a wide array of mechanisms to blunt that pain of reality that we don't want to face, which is why ultimately, and I know I'm just going to give a quick commercial here for self-esteem, but at the core of self-esteem, we would see if this is like 3 hours long, or about a 20 time, is that self-acceptance is where we find self-esteem. Because when I can accept who I am unconditionally, I've complete self-love. Now, people conflate self-acceptance with self-approval a lot, meaning by our kids, by ourselves, and they're completely different. Self-acceptance means I accept who I am, where I am, how I am, no matter what. If I never change, I never grew, I accept this me, and I'm okay just as I am. Approval means I approve everything I do, which I don't. I don't approve everything my kids does. I don't approve a lot of things they do. Doesn't mean I can't accept them. So when we confuse those two, and particularly by children, that when they think that, you know, they're not accepted because you don't approve of something, it can be injurious. Rather, I tell my kids, I love you and I accept you. If you never did anything, you just sat on the couch, you never without, I would accept you completely. You'd be a lousy bum, and I don't approve of a fraction of that stuff, and let's all just move forward. And really, the beginning of growth requires self-acceptance. For example, if you are traveling from Cincinnati to Cleveland, the GPS will locate, you put in the address in Cleveland where you want to go. What's the first thing the GPS has to do after you put the address in and where you want to go? Good, but how does it do all of that? How does it calculate? Good. It has to know where you are, right? The first thing the satellite does, if you want to go here, very nice, where are you now? A person who goes like this and says, I can't see me, I don't accept me, is too busy living their lives in their world with all these shields up, all these defense mechanisms up, everything projecting and pushing the world away, defending their fragile ego. They can't move forward, they're just tired. But in order for me to move from point A to point B, I have to accept from my point A. If I refuse to accept, say, no, I'm not really an A, I'm really this or this and that, how can I go to point B? The beginning of growth is when we accept this is who I am, where I am, how I am. I want to share with you something parenthetically, totally related, but it's going to be an example that hopefully won't be too jarring. It's shown bias. I'm speaking with a couple, lovely couple, and this guy who is a sweetheart. You know the people who have problems and they're not nice? He's a guy problem and he's nice. You know, there's two different sides of it. People who just really are just not, and people, he's a nice guy with problems. Also one of the sharpest people I ever met. This guy and we have, a good time, but, you know, he's got to pay for it. But, you know, we go back and forth trying to judge, because to him, he lives in a logical world, and his reticence is fantastic. But, you know, they both have a mishigas from childhood, which in both cases was quite abusive. So our breakthrough came, and I don't have schleppy process. I say breakthrough meaning after week three. When I said the following to him, and he started to cry, probably maybe the first time this guy cried in, you know, 50 years. I said to him, look, so-and-so, and this is what I wanted to say in the first 5 minutes, but I held back. I was fortunate to at least have that sense to hold back a little bit until I was just thought time to say it. I said, let me say something. The wife that you want, you will never have. And he was just like a ton of bricks. But after that, the marriage became near magical because he was no longer trying to fix her, to change her, to not accept the reality. This is the reality. Now, can she move forward? Can she be something that he wants more? Of course. And the mindset is, once he began to say, this is my wife, I accept her as she is, how she is, she began to change. Now, of course, she didn't change in a vacuum. His behavior toward her allowed for her real self to come through more authentically because she didn't feel like she was constantly being judged and belittled, not in the direct way, but feel like she wasn't enough. She wasn't doing enough. And no woman, as we well know, doesn't want to feel like they're not enough. They're not complete for their husband. So when he was able to see her as whole and not fractured, she was able to move and engage in that way. But with ourselves, our relationships, our children, you know, which is why we spoke about expectations, and that's really a segue to acceptance, and once again, it takes us further in a different direction. But when we accept somebody as they are, and just the situation as it is, our expectations get dialed down to zero. In other words, we can have wants, interests, desires, great. But expectations, as somebody said nicely yesterday, it is planned resentment. You're setting yourself up to be resentful. Because expectations are a function of the horror, the ego. Expectations say the world should unfold according to me. And it doesn't always unfold according to me. I wish it did. It doesn't. Okay. So of course we should be growth oriented. I'm just mindful to avoid the word expectation because it sets us up for the possibility of failure. Rather, I for myself, I can tell you, I have wants, I have interests, I have desires, I have hopes, I have dreams. I try to take the word expectation off the table. I fully believe, that's right. That's right. I may accomplish this. I may do this. I hope for this. I doubt for this. When I say I expect it, what that means is Lieberman's in charge, not Hashem. That puts you in a tough place. Okay? So, you ever hear the idea that people that win the lottery end up more miserable than were than before they win the money? Here's what research shows. That people that win $1 million or more after 1 year have a higher statistical rate of suicide, drunken driving, divorce, and even bankruptcy. All the money did was give them more opportunities to make lousier choices faster and easier than they could before. It was a test, and they failed. And now some of you are thinking, test me. Because free will is a great equalizer, the ability to choose responsibly. At the end of the day, the quality of our lives comes down to the quality of our choices. If we accept responsibility for who we are and what we can be, nothing can stop us. If we don't, nothing will ever move us. We can blame until we're blue in the face. And we may be right. I'm here because of this parent, of this circumstance, this rabbi, this teacher, this father. Right. But right here, right now, I have a choice. I can resign myself to victimhood, or I can say, okay, I'm responsible for moving myself forward. And there are fewer things more empowering, more invigorating, more exciting than by making a decision that you have the power to move yourself forward. Because if you lay blame for where you are for somebody else, now give you keys to move you forward. Now, again, there may have been a confluence and a package of conditions that landed me here. And I could often point the finger at other people. But end of the day is, I'm going to be the only person that's going to move me forward. Doesn't mean I don't get help. Doesn't mean I don't understand the people. Doesn't mean I don't do everything under the sun. But it does mean my stylist requires me to step up to the plate and take responsibility. Yes, Reverend.
So what you just described sounds like that third part of you, the neshama part of you, wanting to do the right thing, right? Moving yourself forward is having that third piece, not the ego, not the body, but the soul part.
Which is our essence.
Driving the bus.
Good, great.
Okay, so then how do you always keep that the driver of the bus and not the other? Like, how do you, like, actually switch that?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, are there tips or tactics to constantly keep that in the front of your brain instead of, like, your ego or your body?
But how do you play that? Hundreds of different things you can do to reinforce that. And we'll lay out just a couple of the ones I think are on the top tier. But one is to remind yourself, rather than say I'm hungry, I say my body's hungry, right? Rather say, oh, I want that shirt. My ego wants that shirt, right? And then when it comes to doing something right and responsible, it's like, ah, I want to give to this person. The real I try to identify when I'm doing what's responsible. Everything else, and you begin to almost to see yourself as the real you, because it's what you're calling yourself. And everything else is, oh, I hurt my hand, right? I didn't get hurt. My hand got hurt. Again, this is for reasonably healthy people. If you're already dealing with some stuff, better to know that your hand is your hand and, yeah, not to get you out there. So by constantly, this is something I do, I constantly reinforce, you know, this is who I am. Another thing to do is, this is something we touched on a lot, is about moving forward, is to understand is why do we give in to the body or give in to the ego, right? And Hashem set this system up. You know, the Yitzhahor Yitzhatov is the very reason why we're created. Not the class on the Ramchal, but in 60 seconds, the Ramchal explains that Hashem created the world for pleasure. In order to gain pleasure, what is the greatest pleasure? To be close to Hashem. Right, to clear the Hashem. In the physical world, if I want to go close to somebody, I take steps. Non-physical space, closeness is measured in terms of similarities. The more similar I am, the closer I am. So how do we, as ultimate takers, which we are, become closer to Hashem, who is the exact opposite, ultimate giver? Right? That is, we have to choose to give by choice. We need autonomy. We need freedom. We can't simply be a robot, a malach, somebody who is commanded to do it. We have to have free choice. Enter now the Yetzirah, Yetzirah struggle. The Yetzirah is a mechanism that allows for choice to exist. Without it, we wouldn't have it. So it is the classic struggle. It is why we hear. And ultimately, as we know, Olam Haba is one thing, but even in Olam Hazeh, in this world, you know from your own lives, when you choose responsibly, you rise above your Yetzirah, your ego, your body, and you do what's right, you feel good. You feel love for yourself. You feel closer to Hashem. When you choose irresponsibly, just the mechanics here, the spiritual and psychological mechanics are, I choose irresponsibly. My self-esteem goes down, my ego goes up, right? My ego is just going to compensate for feelings of guilt, inferiority, and shame, and so on. The ego is only a false self. It exists to make up for the part of me that I'm not willing to accept. So my ego exists. The ego blocks my relationship with Hashem. It blocks perspective. Perspective is synonymous with my ability to see, accept, and respond to my world. That's what it means to be sane, that perspective. The ego, the Yetzirah, blocks perspective. Going back to the Medrash, Adam and Rishon could see from one end to the other. Chazal explained that before the Yetzirah became internalized, man's perception was unfettered. We could see clearly. Only once the serpent incarnate, the Yetzirah, becomes internalized, we begin to see through this cloudy lens of eye, which blocks our perspective. When a person is egocentric, do they see the world in you, or do they see themselves? They see themselves. As my ego shrinks, my perspective widens. So, ultimately, you know, Chazal say that one avera leads to another avera, one mitzvah leads to another mitzvah. Why? In part, because when you do what's right and responsible, Self-esteem goes up, ego is down, perspective widens. I see reality. I can see Hashem in my world. I can see the good. I can appreciate the good. I feel closer, and I want to do more good. When a person does what's wrong, right, my self-esteem goes down, my ego engages, it justifies, rationalizes, blames, right? All that feeling, guilt, and shame, it all lives myself, becomes covered up. And now I'm disinclined to go ahead and to be more positive and to do good because I'm coming from a place of pain. When we don't like ourselves, we don't invest in ourselves. Self-esteem is the fuel of self-discipline, right? When you love who you are, you want to invest in yourself. A person that overeats, oversleeps, distractions, entertainment, drugs, alcohol, all these things, are not because I love myself so much, I want to give myself more treats. It is, I don't like myself, I want to distract and divert my attention from who I am. And that's not how we build a relationship with Hashem. So when you want to focus more on being good, remind yourself who you are. And the second thing, again, there are tons of things you can do, and it's, I want, if we have, I give them more time, but yeah, turn of time, again. And I think, okay, I don't want to just be, actually, everything I mentioned is free, so there's not a lot of commercials here. But I did write a book, my last secular book, second, meaning it wasn't published through Feldheim, is called Never Get Angry Again. If you have anyone with anger issues, I don't say it's about all my books, it's a great book. Some of my books I wouldn't recommend. I've written 12, 13. This one I would recommend. It is, I believe, a book that is so clear and logical, and I've brought Hashem, I've gotten just great feedback from Jewish, non-Jewish, from, pretty much walks you through, if you have any anger issues, how and what you can do in order to understand where they come from, and then just let it go. Yes, please.
Can I get back to, you talk a lot about expectations.
Sure.
And self-esteem, and so I grew up with the expression, I know Cricket said, plan presented yesterday, I grew up with the expression, expectations lead to disappointment.
Yeah.
And then when you talk about expectations on yourself, and you get disappointed at yourself,
sure,
and you
right.
don't meet your own expectations.
Good, right.
And then can you reframe that all into how we can use that, I guess, in a positive way for self-care?
Sure.
And
sure.
Moving our self-esteem.
Good.
Goal-oriented.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Like moving it away from the, like I said, expectations lead to disappointment. How can we not set expectations by maybe making
good.
Proper goals for ourselves
good.
To move ourselves forward and
good.
Avoid that disappointment?
Good. So, okay. So ultimately, the reason why we have expectations in the first place is because they're built on the foundation of the ego, right? The ego says, it's my world, everything should unfold according to me. The neshama, the soul, the real you says, this is Hashem's world, and my job is to do my shtadlus, and then I have to tachen, and then I go weiter, I go forward. So, you know, this actually leads into another thread, an invisible thread of emunah and betachen, meaning that when we choose responsibly, we're rising above our nature, we're able to exercise self-control, we can trust ourselves. When we trust ourselves, we can trust other people, we can trust Hashem. A person that cannot trust themselves do not trust other people easily and certainly have a hard time trusting Hashem. The concept of trust is theoretical. But when we rise above our yetzer hara, we know that we have impulse control. We can control our behavior. We feel a sense, I can trust me, I can trust you, and that's the whole tie-in here. The more responsible we are, the easier it is to let go of expectations of other people. Because we also know, ultimately, that how somebody treats me is a reflection of their self-worth. It says nothing about me. What we have expectations for, why I want my husband to do this, my wife to do this, my kids to do this, this or this, is because I feel that this is what I need to feel loved, to feel respected, and so on. But if I already feel loved and respected from myself, right, I would like other people to love me, but I don't need other people, the world, rather, to love and respect me. I do need positive, healthy relationships. But the less I love me, the less I respect me, the more I need everyone else to love and respect me. Unfortunately, we're setting ourselves up for a catch-22. Because if I don't love me, I've got two problems. One is, I can't love you. As Rav Noach Weinberg used to say, if you don't love you, don't love me. Right? So if I don't have high self-esteem, I can't love you and respect you. You give what you got. If I don't love me, what am I going to give? Second, when you give it to me, I have no clue to hold it. Because I cannot understand why you would love someone that's so unlovable. I cannot understand why you would respect somebody that's so not worthy of respect. Because I don't respect me. I have to assume that anything you do, right, is not because... It's not genuine. It's not positive, and which is why sometimes you can give and give to people, and it's just a bottomless pit because they have no cleats to hold it. So our expectations, again, wind its way back to the ego, with ourselves and with others. And it is valuable to have our own interests, wants, desires. And I have high hopes for myself, but I take the word expectation off the table because I don't want to go to battle with the creative universe, right? I want to line myself up and say, this is what I hope for. I hope my roots are, and that's ultimately the branches come to the trunk of where the ratzon, the will of the person, is the will of Hashem. And Hashem says, because I'll say that Hashem says, if you make your will my will, I will make my will your will. Right? If we do what Hashem wants, then Hashem will do what we want. Ultimately, it's not about, what's that? It's the same thing. That's right. Ultimately, is we're on the same page. And that is a degree of self-esteem, a currency that is invaluable. And again, just to go back to the point that we had touched on before we went off here, is that self-esteem is the engine for self-discipline. We invest in things and people and, you know, a person rents a car, right? How many are you taking it to the car wash? You lease the car, maybe a little more. You own the car. See these guys out scrubbing their car, cleaning car, whatever. Because they love it. They invest in it. They care about it, right? But if it's not yours, if you don't really own it, you don't care, you're not going to invest in it. So a person that invests in themselves is somebody who loves themselves. And self-love, self-esteem is the engine of self-discipline. Now we come to a little bit of another catch-22 insofar as fine. I have to love myself to invest in myself, and I have to invest in myself to love myself. So how am I getting out of this problem, right? And the answer is, certainly is davening. That is our escape hatch out, because our ability to be able to connect with Hashem vis-a-vis our ratzon, our greatest will, is what will help to open up an entire breach for us to move forward. But for ourselves, it comes from small incremental change. If anyone that takes on something big is setting themselves up far too often for failure. But to say, you know what, I'm going to make a commitment the next 30 days to go ahead and to, I was working with somebody just recently, and this guy came into the office and was nice guy, again, nice guy, but, everything typical, but, you know, engaging in some stuff that he didn't feel great about. Now, a typical process might have been to say, what are you doing? You have all this going for this and that, and to beat the guy up. Not my approach. I knew it wasn't going to work for this guy. I said, for the next 30 days, every day, spend 5 minutes thinking about what you get right, the hits, not the misses. Where you go right, the conversations you didn't explode in anger, the conversations you bit your tongue, this and that. This guy was riding on such a high, he kept on wanting to do more and more and more and more because he saw himself, his self-concept now, was a good, decent person who wants to move forward. Okay. We do need to wrap up. Any final questions before we do? I know. Oh, by the way, if you're interested, I am trying to start, if I pull it off great, a weekly VOD, like a workshop, one for parenting and showing bias, and the other for personal development. If you're interested, I don't know when it's going to be, but you can email my assistant. The address is samgold@live.com, and ask about it, and tell them, you know, that you live here, and we'll put you on the list, and we'll get forward. SAMGOLD @live.com. live.com. Right. Okay. If there's no further questions, let me just gently encourage you to recognize that the quality of our lives comes down to the quality of our choices. If we accept responsibility for who we are and what we can become, nothing can stop us. If we don't, nothing will ever move us. It is up to you. And that is very empowering. Sometimes a little bit scary, because with that great power comes responsibility, but the capability to be able to move our lives forward. So with that, I wish you all well, and thank you so much. It's been a really great Shabbos. Thank you. You have a quick question, Robinson?
Well, I think it was hard to formulate
in my mind. Thank you. 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 Thank
you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.